You're listening to coverage from the 2008 Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me okay? We're going to go ahead and get started. I am Ryan Rupert with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. I'm the Director of Beef Quality Assurance, and it's my pleasure to introduce a lifelong friend. I've known Dr. Groat Lucian forever. Him and his daughter and I went to school together, and he was our veterinarian until he went to work for the University of Nebraska. So I'd like to thank Pfizer for their 15 years of support of Cattlemen's College, and I'd like to let Dale go ahead and start us off today.
Thanks, Ryan. It's a pleasure to be here. I didn't think I heard Ryan say when he went to school with one of our daughters, but this was like third and fourth grade, Ryan, or when was this? It wasn't exactly college. Okay, back in the good old days, I guess. Well, I'm not going to spend very much time here in front of you because I think the rest of the topics here this morning are where we want to go. But I just like to comment that, you know, this is a session really on designing animal health programs. We certainly have tools and resources and thinking that are present that were not available not very many years ago. And I think we're well recognizing in the industry the importance of lifetime, you know, productivity. Things that happen during gestation or early in life affect animals through their entire production cycle. So we're not only interested in, you know, acute disease, but also chronic disease, as well as impacts on productivity such as carcass quality, average daily gain. So we're trying to grasp what we need to get back in our production systems that we can gain by more up-to-date control of disease. And our speaker's going to be talking about biosecurity and biocontainment concepts. And I think the two topics that are coming up are going to be our excellent examples of biosecurity and biocontainment. You know, simply, what can we do to prevent disease or an agent entry into our operations? And then for agents that are already present, what can we do, what should we do to control them in our herd situation? So I think you're going to enjoy the speakers, the presenters in the next hour and a half, and we'll look forward to it very much. So with that, Ryan, I'm going to step back. Thank you.
Thank you, Dale. We really appreciate your support for Cattlemen's College. We want to start today with Dr. Dave Smith from the University of Nebraska at Lincoln. He's a veterinarian there, and I will let him introduce himself.
Thanks, Ryan. Can you hear me all right? Is that carrying all right? Okay. I really appreciate the opportunity to... I see I'm limited by my... There we go. I'm really glad to be here. Appreciate the invitation to be here. I want to talk about one particular aspect of disease control. So the theme of the morning is going to be managing your cattle to control infectious diseases. I'm going to talk about one particular problem as it relates to calf scours, diarrhea, and baby calves. And we're going to hear some other things about some other disease problems. So I'm going to talk about the principles of the Sandhills calving system. The Sandhills calving system is a management approach to controlling calf scours. So there's lots. We've got some research data that I'm going to share with you. Lots of testimonials from ranchers that have used this system. This is a rancher that's used the system, and this was I don't want to put anybody on the spot, but this was a story that was in Successful Farming. Rancher in Nebraska, Terry Clemens, and he is shown here finishing a chore that has helped cut calf scours on his Luke County, Nebraska ranch to non-existent. All right, so when I first met Terry Clements, it would be hard to imagine that you'd have a comment like that. The calf scours was non-existent in this ranching operation. So I'm going to talk about the things that Terry has done that's made a difference in his herd, and more importantly, the principles that go behind it, because I get a lot of calls from ranchers that say, well, this all sounds fine, but is there some other way of applying, of doing the same thing? And so I want you to be creative in thinking about how the principles that we use to come up with this idea might be applicable to your own ranch setting. All right. I started an extension about 10 years ago at the University of Nebraska, and one of the first things they told me to do is, Dave, when you go out and you talk to cattlemen, don't be, you know, showing slides of hogs and talking about hogs. But I want to illustrate that the concepts that I'm going to talk about are not new concepts at all. So this is something from veterinary history years ago, the McLean County system of swine sanitation. Has anybody ever heard of that before? Well, I'm talking to the wrong audience, obviously, but this was a disease problem that affected pigs back in the 1920s, early part of the 20th century. They were limited in their ability to produce healthy, thrifty pigs because of roundworms. All right, so baby pigs would pick up these ascrid eggs out in the pastures. They were running with the sows. They'd pick up these eggs. They'd be heavily parasitized, and they wouldn't be very productive. All right, how to solve this problem? And this is in an era before we had good deworming agents and things like that. And so the system that they came up with to control that was to bring the sows in off of that pasture to farrow, wash the udder so that there was no eggs sticking to the udder, the pig wasn't going to get a dose of infection from the sow. And then they would transport that pig and sow out to a pasture that had not been used for pigs in the past, or at least it had been, you know, plowed up, had been a cornfield in between times, right? So that they were putting those pigs onto a clean pasture where they wouldn't be exposed to those ascrid eggs. All right, it was very successful, and so at a time that was an important way of controlling disease. So these principles of biosecurity and biocontainment that I'm going to talk about, I want to illustrate with an example that I use with veterinary students to come to Nebraska. So we'll talk a little bit about domino ranching. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with domino ranching, but you're familiar with dominoes, aren't you? So you know that one of the things that you can do with dominoes is stack them up, but one thing that always happens is that they fall down. So we'll think about that in terms of being a domino disease. All right, so the one disease we have to worry about with dominoes is that they fall down. All right, so if you were going to make the situation as bad as possible, this is the interactive part of the program here. So if you're going to make this as bad as possible, how would you set those dominoes up so that the most dominoes would fall down? All right, I heard somebody say it. Put them close together, right? So that if one domino falls down, it hits the next domino, and then the next domino falls down. So the closer we can get them, the worse it's going to be. And if you were going to maximize it, absolutely maximize it, you know, the biggest, what are we trying to do? I'll give you the answer to that one, because it's actually the same thing. But you want to set it up so that if one domino falls down, it hits at least two. And if those dominoes fall down, they hit at least two. So you're maximizing how rapidly those dominoes fall down. Does that make sense? Now stay with me on this, because at the end, if you all get through this, we're going to give you a certificate. You'll be eligible to practice on dominoes, okay? So we're starting to understand the disease process with dominoes. Now let's think about what you'd do if you were going to try to control this disease problem with dominoes. All right, so what can we do? We've got this problem with dominoes falling down. We've got our herds of dominoes. We don't want them to fall down. What can we do? Okay, spread them out. Does everybody see how that, and what happens if we spread those dominoes out? Well, if one falls down, it doesn't necessarily hit another domino and knock it down, right? Okay, so that's one very good effective strategy. But that's going to take a lot of land, right? We've got to spread these dominoes out over a lot of acres, sections, whatever. So what else could we do? Oh, that's a good one. So lay them down. Lay them down flat. I don't think you mean kill them all, right? You know. Okay, but if they're because I've had that suggested before. Market them before they fall down. And I. But we could lay them down so that they're not so tall and they're more resistant to falling over, right? Or another strategy like that would be, well, let's glue them to the table so that they're more resistant to falling down. So one is, well, maybe we can breed those dominoes so that they're more like this than like this, and they're less likely to fall down. So we could breed them for that resistance to falling over. We could apply some other intervention like glue or tape that would make them more resistant to falling down. All right, so we've got two good strategies for controlling this disease process. Can you think of another one? Stop them from falling down in the first place? All right, yeah. So how do they fall down? And what happens to make the first domino fall down? Well, somebody knocks it over, right? Somebody pushes the first domino over. What if we took our dominoes and we set them someplace where nobody's going to knock the first domino down? If the first domino falls, none of the rest of the dominoes fall. Does that sound reasonable? Three different strategies for controlling domino disease. And we can use those same three strategies for any infectious disease process that I can think of. All right? So what we're talking about, particularly with calf scours, is biocontainment. Those are the actions that you would take on your ranch that would control the spread of infectious agents, the transmission of this process. Okay, so biosecurity happens within population, or biocontainment occurs within a population, and when we talk about one ranch versus the next one, we call that biosecurity. So what do? Prevent effective contacts. Physically separating animals, minimizing their contact time, decreasing the dose load of exposure. Those are the strategies for preventing effective contacts. That's very much like what we talked about when we said we'll spread those dominoes out. Okay. Second thing they told me when I started in an extension was, well, when you're talking to a beef group, it's best to minimize how many pictures of Holstein cows you show. So I'm already on strike two. But this picture illustrates an important point. She's infected with BVD virus. All right. So this cow's got BVD virus. There's millions and millions of viral particles coming out of her nose. So an effective contact is when other animals come in contact with that mucus secretion, those virus particles. And that can happen because of a direct contact with her. So other animals that are commingled with her. But we could take her out of this pen, and you could still have effective contacts when other cattle immediately come in and drink out of this water tank, right? In fact, you could have a lot more effective contacts from cattle drinking out of the tank than coming in contact with her. So there's lots of ways that you can have effective contacts, and some of those things can really amplify the opportunity for transmission. Second principle, increase host resistance. And by the way, we got these in the right order when we were talking about the dominoes. So this is the idea of setting those dominoes on their side so they're less likely to fall down. We do a lot of things with breeding, nutrition, and we use vaccines to increase the resistance of the host against very specific pathogens. All right, and the final one was the idea of, well, don't let that first domino fall down. Well, let's not let the pathogen into the herd in the first place. And if it's there, let's get it out of there. All right, and we'll see that sometimes that's an effective strategy and sometimes it's not. All of these can be effective strategies or not, depending on the disease process that we're dealing with. All right, so the topic for today, then, or my topic for the day, is neonatal calf diarrhea. You're probably familiar with calf scours because you've seen it on your neighbor's ranch. All right, so you want to go back home and tell them what you saw here. Neonatal calf scours is important because of losses, because of calves dying. Those calves that survive may be less productive. You've got treatment costs associated with trying to save those calves. And there's actually a huge human toll that we don't talk about very often. First thing is, when you're out there catching calves to treat them, give them fluids and so forth, you're at risk for getting hurt. And everybody has stories about some mama cow putting them in the cab of the pickup truck or something like that. And when you're spending all your time out there catching calves, you're just putting yourself at increased risk for getting injured, let alone the calf giving you a quick kick to the jaw or something. there's a lot of frustration. When I go to ranches that are experiencing calf scours, the calves are dying. They've worked day and night to get those live calves on the ground, and then within a few weeks, they're seeing those calves wither and die. There's a lot of frustration that goes along with that, and it's hard to measure, but it's certainly present. There are some public health concerns about calf scours. So some of the pathogens that make calves sick, give them diarrhea, also make people sick. All right, so pathogens like Cryptosporidia, Salmonella. And there is, you know, the concern about using antibiotics in any type of an application, whether it's for humans or animals. The more we can minimize that, the more we save those antibiotics for when we really need them, and we minimize the development of antimicrobial resistance. For many ranchers, the most likely reason that they're going to pick up a bottle of an antibiotic is because they've got scouring calves that they want to treat. All right. So the agents that cause calf scours are numerous. There's bacteria, there's viruses, there's protozoa. We sometimes see these fungal infections. So after a calf has been treated with antibiotics for an extended period of time and you've wiped out all of the normal flora, then these fungal infections take over. And so a lot of calves that we post actually end up dying from a fungal infection. It wasn't what started the problem, but it's what finished it. These agents that cause calf scours are present in every cattle herd. So if we look hard enough, we can find at least most of the agents, rotavirus, coronavirus, crypto. They're present everywhere, even in the herds that are not having problems with scours. All right, and so what that leaves us with then is this balance between the immune status of the calf, the ability of that calf to resist these infections, and its level of exposure to those pathogens. And that battle starts to take place at birth. So the first thing that calf may swallow is a dose load of pathogens that are going to kill it, or it may be getting the colostrum that provides the antibodies and other immune system parameters that will help that calf fight those infections. The protection that calf gets from colostrum at birth is going to disappear with time. Now, gradually with time, that calf is going to develop its own active immune response. So as it's exposed to those pathogens, its immune system ramps up and builds some protection. But there may be a period of time when antibodies from colostrum, that passive protection, is being lost, and we haven't quite got that active immune response ramped up to go yet, and so there might be a period of time when that calf is more susceptible to scours. And if there is a sufficient level of exposure, high enough to overwhelm that immune system, we may see scours. All right, and that is what we see. We see calves dying from scours within a very narrow range of age. All right, and that's typically between 1 week of age and 2 weeks of age. Most calves in their second and third weeks of life, are if they're going to die from scours, that's when it's going to happen. So that's the population of calves that are susceptible to scours. It's also the age when calves become infective. So store that away. What I'm talking about is the age that calves are able to transmit that pathogen to another calf. Okay, so in they're not just infected, they're not just susceptible to infection, but if they do become infected, that's the age when they can start to pass that on. That's like the domino hitting the next domino. Okay? All right. In Nebraska, we've spent a number of years, Dr. Grotolution's been involved with this work, many other pathologists in the diagnostic lab, veterinarians out in the field helped us work on this problem of calf scours. We conducted diagnostic investigations from cases coming in. We did some outbreak investigations going to ranches that were having severe losses. And I'm going to talk a little bit about some case studies about how we tried to intervene. This work was done in the Nebraska Sandhills, a very unique area of the country. I don't know if all of you have been to the Nebraska Sandhills. If you haven't been, it's sure worth the trip. Anyways, the work is done there. I'm going to describe a few ranches some of the things we learned from some of those ranches in the Sandhills, but these principles are more widely applicable than just within the Sandhills in Nebraska. All right, so one of those herds was an interesting case. I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about this one herd because it represents what we saw on a lot of the ranches that we were investigating. This is a herd with 402 cattle that had live births in this particular calving season. They're managed in an intensive grazing, grass management system. So every few days they're moving these cattle to a new pasture. They've had a history of scours in this ranch for a number of years, higher than acceptable death losses. This year they decided to put their management efforts to other than trying to catch and treat calves. Okay, so no interventions for trying to treat and save sick calves. They lost 48 calves due to scours. Now those were same kind of losses that they were having otherwise, so the treatment interventions weren't being all that effective anyway. But it gave us a very unique opportunity to study this herd because there wasn't anything that interfered with the natural disease process of the outbreak. So this is just like the buffalo moving across the plains, right, where these cattle are moving as one single group, having this disease outbreak take place, and we could look at the information that we could glean from that. The best thing about this is that this was a ranch. This rancher kept meticulous records, and so we were able to ask some questions about who died and why they died. All right, so we were able to capture those ranch records and analyze them. This is some of that data. So these blue bars represent the number of calves born every week of the calving season. And you can see, looking at the dates, this is a May, calving through May. And